Hello, you're listening now to Talking Shiitake with your hosts on this podcast, Christian Turner and Katie Nelson. They will delve deep into your mind and your psyche, understanding things about yourself that you know not. And for now, you will join them on an adventure. You can also find them on the interwebs, on the Facebook, on the Twitter, on the Talking Shiitake.
This is Christian.
This is Katie.
Hey, we're back for another podcast. I think this is number 4. And we just wanted to thank everybody that was talking to us on Facebook. I know for our conspiracy of the week, we had some different suggestions going from 9/11 to Mia Farrow and her love child with Frank Sinatra. And we may get to some of those later. Probably not the 9/11. 9/11 is kind of overdone, I think, but
there's plenty of information out there on 9/11.
Yep, and don't believe any of it. No building was blown up.
It never happened? Well, it's like the moon landing?
It did happen. Hey, the moon landing was on there, too.
Oh, yeah, it was.
But I don't believe any of those buildings were pulled. That's in quotation marks, or air quotation marks, if you could see me.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things we'd heard about was the Illuminati.
Illuminati, that's always a good one, right?
To some people it is. What do you think about the Illuminati, Katie?
Well, you know, we have a lot of different theories on it. I mean, it became obviously very popular with Angels and Demons and some of the movies out, and people always talking about, you know, what is the Illuminati and who are they and what are they controlling? And, you know, I've actually talked to people that have been involved in some of it, and honestly, I don't know that it's the New World Order. I don't know that it's the global government. It's the underlying force of the elites is the way I look at it. And if we think that we're going to be able to truly identify who they are, I think we're sadly mistaken. Some people have traced it to the Vatican. I mean, the Vatican has known Illuminati ties. So there's, you know, there's a lot of people out there thinking that these are the bad guys, but we don't really know that they are. Just because it's a global government doesn't necessarily make it bad. Just because, you know, maybe they're the ones trying to unite everyone. If we look at what Illuminati actually means, it means to be illumined. It means to be enlightened. They actually were striving for enlightenment. If we go back to the roots of what the Illuminati truly is, if we look at the Freemasons, who are supposedly have the ties with the Illuminati, and we see what they are, and even just in their sign with the you know, the triangle, and it's basically what is the makeup of our existence. They don't necessarily have a certain religion per se or a dogma, but they do have a spirituality within them. So to say that it's evil and to say that it's Satan and the devil, there may be aspects of that, just like in any other religion, you have an evil part of it. But the Illuminati is, you know, it's elusive. It really is. It's a secret, but maybe it should be a secret. Maybe people shouldn't have the information that they have. What would we do with it? Most people would use it for bad anyway.
Yeah, that's what it seems like to me. I mean, is the Illuminati, does it have anything to do with the Morning Star?
Right.
You know,
it can. And now the Morning Star it's interesting because the Morning Star is also associated with Lucifer. And I know most people, when they hear the word Lucifer, they think of Satan and they think of, you know, the devil and everything else. But if we look at it, it's the same thing. It's the Lucifer is the light. It's the light bringer. It's the bringer of light. So that's the association between the Illuminati and Lucifer, and that's why it has that kind of, oh, they're devil worshippers, that kind of thing, because there is that association there where Lucifer is the light bringer and the Illuminati are the illumined ones, and there's definitely a tie in there.
I remember when I was younger hearing some of my friends at that time talking about how the Freemasons were basically devil worshippers, and I think maybe that was the connection that they made or that they were taught. I don't see anything into it, and I don't have an opinion on whether somebody, the Illuminati, is actually true. I think there might be some rich people that want power that try to convince others that they have, that they're involved in it, and maybe just a bunch of, I think it's just a bunch of, you know, misinformation. And I don't think it really matters in the grand scheme of things for each of us individually.
Mm-hmm.
What if there was some global conspiracy by the Illuminati? What's it going to affect due to our daily existence? I don't think it's going to have much of an effect.
And it may not. I mean, we don't know. They could be what's controlling our government anyway. We know that a lot of our presidents have been Freemasons. If there is a tie-in to Freemasonry and the Illuminati, then maybe our controlling founding fathers are actually Illuminati themselves.
Wouldn't you think that maybe those kids in college that say, hey, I want to become a president, you know, someday, because mm-hmm. most of the presidents know that someday down the line they want to become a president, and they hear about this club, this, you know, the at their college, you know, at, what is it, the Skull and Bones Society.
Right, and which we know W is a big, pretty big up in the Skull and Bones.
And there's been a couple presidents, or more than a couple, that are supposedly in it. But they know about this club. It's kind of a well-connected club, a lot of famous people, a lot of rich people involved.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they want to be president. Why wouldn't they go for it?
You know. Well, I think that part of it, what they're saying, though, is in order to make it to the higher ranks of some of these clubs, that you do have to go through somewhat of an initiation. So as you get to the higher rankings of these clubs, you are initiated into, I don't know, like when you become a 33-degree Freemason, you can't really become president until you're there, which means that you can't just be some kid on the street saying, you know what, one day I'm going to be president. You have to actually go through the initiation process, and they're going to weed out the people who are going to resist, which means that everybody who makes it to that degree is going to be a puppet, and they're going to be able to control them. That way they make sure that they have somebody groomed in office, that they already know what they're going to do. They're going to listen to everything that they say because they understand the system. You have to go through the system to be at the top of the system. In order to do that, you're going to be controlled by the system.
But it seems to me like initiations are just a part of life. It's you have True. To go through an initiation for everything, so why is one worse than the other?
I don't know that it's worse than the other, but you have to, I guess, give up some of your free beliefs, free thinking. They're not going to get a free thinker in there. You're not going to get somebody creative who's going to say, you know what, let's think outside the box. Let's do what's good for the people. You're not going to have somebody in office like that because they've been groomed to not do that, to not ask questions, to not go against the mainstream. They're going to go with what they're told to do. And those are the only people that are going to make it to the top. And once you get to the final four, you really have no choice. All four, the final four presidents, they've already been groomed. They're already controlled. So we can say that we have the choice of who we're electing for president, and we have the choice of those four, but everybody else is going to be weeded out.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I think that's the fallacy of our two-party system, is it's just one party, and it's two sides of the same coin.
Exactly. So we feel like we have some sort of choice and some sort of freedom. Freedom's pretty much an illusion at this point, since we've given away all of our sovereignty willingly.
What do you mean by that?
That we've allowed ourselves to be controlled. And I think it's been done through fear, where we're afraid of certain things, or they install fear in us. And then we say, oh, well, we can't do this on our own. We're going to have the government provide food for us. We're going to have the government provide health care for us. We're going to have the government provide education for us. That way, they're still controlling it. You control the information. You control everything. And we allow them to control that. We've given it away.
But do you think humans, out of their kindness of their own heart, would provide all that, or they're going to?
I do. I do, and they have in the past, and they did prior to our government existing. We did it as tribes. If you see your neighbor suffering, you're going to help them. But now we have a mentality where we don't want to help people because we're already given so much in taxes. Screw those people. We're given everything we are because we're forced to give. We're not giving out of the kindness of our heart. We're giving because we have to, or we're going to go to jail if we don't.
Well, what about in the past, your neighbor tended to look a lot like you, but nowadays, that's not quite the case here in the U.S. Your neighbor doesn't look like you, so therefore part of your tribe. So why are you going to help them?
Well, I think that because we judge people by their appearance, that alone has already caused a problem.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there, but I just think that the tribe part in the past doesn't work now because it's just a different world, and your neighbor might not look like you. And it takes a little bit of extra effort to extend that helping hand if you're afraid of that neighbor, which...
You're afraid of that neighbor. Why, though? That fear has been installed. I'm afraid of somebody who wears a turban on their head because I've been told that these people are terrorists. I'm afraid of somebody who looks, you know, different than me because I've been told, and the news media is programming me to believe that these people are less than what they should be, whereas I should be just accepting everybody for who they are. And if everybody did that, we wouldn't really have those issues. But because we have this fear factor that's been embedded in us through the media, through, well, basically the media, internet, everywhere else you want to look, they're controlling our fear. They're controlling our thoughts, and we welcome it into our homes by turning on the television.
You don't think it's getting better?
I think that to a degree that it is, only because the system itself is kind of collapsing. People can sense the disingenuousness, I guess, of what's happening. And we have, as humans, we have pretty good BS meters. We really do. Eventually, we will sift through the crap and we will find the truth if we want to. But a lot of people are happy being complacent and having the government take care of them. And until we get through that and this fear-based mentality, we're going to be struggling through it.
I agree with you on a lot of the aspects. I just don't know if we can put all the blame on the government. I think
It's our blame because we're the ones who put the government in power. We're the ones who gave away our power to them. We are responsible. I take 100% responsibility on myself for it. But the only way we're going to change it is to be able to recognize it.
So you're blaming Obama?
Well, ultimately, if I blame Obama, then we have to blame Bush because. You know what I mean? He's really at fault for everything, correct?
That's what some people say. I always stick with the fact that we need to blame the people that don't really ever change every 4 to 8 years, and that seems to be Congress.
Yeah.
That's the one constant through all the different presidents and all these same decisions and craziness and paying to the corporations and the people that got these congressmen elected. And they like to blame it on whoever the president is at the time, but that seems like just a smokescreen.
I agree. We're trying to find the enemy. And who's the enemy? I mean, I always say that you're going to find the enemy is like nailing jello to a wall. It's not going to be easy. And it's elusive. Those people who you think are out for your best interest are most likely the ones that are not. And that's where it becomes so convoluted. And when we think we can identify who the Illuminati is and who the New World Order is and who the ruling elite are, trust me, they're one step ahead. And we are not going to be able to find them that easy. That's why we just have to look within ourselves. We don't have control over that. The enemy is actually within ourselves, and that's what we don't want to see.
Do you remember David Icke talking about how all the people that were in power were reptilians?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That feels crazy.
He's out there, but he's got some really good information. If you really listen to him, I've read a few of his books. David Icke, he knows what's going on. And just to say that we don't have influences that are interdimensional, I mean, like people say extraterrestrial, but I like to say interdimensional. I don't know that they're necessarily from another planet, but they could be from a different time.
But it's the aliens.
Who's to say that they're not? Who's to say that we're not the aliens here? I mean, we don't really know where we come from. You know, there's never been a missing link. We don't know that we've evolved from apes. Do you know what I'm saying? And then the creation story has its own issues too, but there's never been that missing link between the two.
We're only, this world's only, what, 6,000 years old, though? How can there be a missing link?
Right, yeah, because those fossils, What? Where'd they come from?
Deception.
They were made up?
That's what I hear.
There was an interesting story about that. There was a guy who confronted some creationists on that, and they said, well, there's fossils. How do you explain that? Where it happened to the dinosaurs? And they said, well, the dinosaurs are still alive. He said, really? Well, where are they? And they're in the jungles of Africa. They're in the jungles of Africa. Well, how come we haven't found them? Because they're, you know, hidden way deep in the jungles of Africa. I mean, you can rationalize anything. This is what the human mind does. It rationalizes to fit our own little theories.
Yeah. It's always interesting to see how everybody else thinks and how they rationalize their existence. and maybe we need to do that. If we've lived our whole life believing one thing, it's really hard to tear that down.
It is. It really is.
And I don't blame people for sticking with what they've been taught to believe or what they've grown up believing, and whether it's evolution or some kind of faith. It's just not that simple. That's why I always say I don't really care what anybody believes, what they do, as long as they're not hurting people. Mm-hmm. They can do and believe whatever they want to believe.
And I just ask that people remain open-minded. You know, let's not just say, you know, we know exactly what's going on. I'm reading a book right now called The Trouble with Physics, and it goes back into people's theories of how everything revolved around the Earth. And that the Earth was just a solid mass, you know, and it was flat. And the five known planets at the time revolved around the Earth, because the Earth was the center of our solar system.
That's
or
like
our
my
galaxy
lifetime.
Or our universe.
Everything revolves around me.
But then you are the center.
That is.
Is that why they call you the black hole?
That could be something else.
Or is that? Am I wrong on that?
I don't recall being called that, but.
Oh, that's not to your face. Sorry about that.
But you've played against me on other teams, and who knows what they've called me in hockey. That could just be one of the many things.
One of the many nicknames that you've been given that you're not aware of.
Right. But I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Keep telling me about this book.
Well, basically, you know, these were the theories at the time, and we can sit back and look at them and go, oh, my gosh, can you believe they thought the Earth was flat and that everything revolved around the Earth? How ridiculous is that? But are we that much more advanced? It's just keep an open mind to realize that we don't really understand it all. And I don't care how much you know about science. Science doesn't have all the answers either. We're still trying to figure it all out. So to sit there and say that I understand it because I read the Bible, or I understand it because I'm a, you know, theoretical physicist, you don't understand it, because there's so many questions that are unanswered on both sides of that aisle. So that all I'm saying is just keep an open mind to realize that we do not understand everything.
But doesn't science have come up with a theory, and then they do everything they can to prove that theory wrong just to make sure that they're on the right track?
They do.
Instead of coming up with ways to support their theory.
And they do both, though, I think. Because the person who comes up with the theory obviously wants to prove that the theory is right. And then there's a lot of other people that test that theory and put it through the tests that, oh my gosh, is this it? Or this doesn't coincide with that. The problem is we take these theories and then we equate them or compare them to what we already know. But do what we already know, is our foundation right? Is general science right? Is the standard model correct? So if we compare everything to the standard model and it doesn't fit, well, then we say that that's wrong. But what we have to look at is the standard model of physics and understand that we don't necessarily know that either.
Shouldn't it all be changing all the time if we start grasping one theory, one belief, and think it's the perfect one? Aren't we wrong right there? Shouldn't it constantly be changing, just like our lives, as we gain more knowledge and understanding and more experience?
100%. I think it's constantly changing, but I do think that there are certain key principles that are constant. There are certain laws of not necessarily physics, but the principles of the foundation of our creation is, you know, of what we live within our universe. There are certain foundations. Gravity exists, whether you believe it or not. Well, do we fully understand gravity? I don't think we necessarily do. Magnetism exists, whether you believe it or not. There are particles. There is vibration. These things are constant that we know exists, whether you want to believe it or not. Those things are not changing. Those things are the foundation of what makes up our universe.
What about haven't there been so-called yogis that can basically levitate?
Right.
Of course, we don't have any of that on film, so it's easy to say 100 years ago or 50 years ago in some crazy outside of the I guess televised world that somebody was able to levitate. And I have trouble believing it until I see it.
But see, that's where I say we don't understand it. Just because somebody levitated, what is it, magic? You know, I mean, magic is just stuff science hasn't been able to explain yet. That's all it is. We just don't necessarily understand it all. Just like how the wolf used to swallow the sun, and that's how it got dark outside. We just, once again, come up with something to rationalize what we see because we can't understand it. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Doesn't mean there's not a scientific basis for everything that's going on, for that yogi levitating. There absolutely is science behind that, but we just don't necessarily understand it yet.
Okay. Now, you know what's funny is we've gotten way down this path and we started out on the Illuminati.
Right. We jumped way down the rabbit hole.
But I guess that's the way we should do it here, and maybe that's the fun part of doing this is we can just end up wherever we end up,
and just kind of roll with it.
Yeah,
once but that's kind of like life too, though.
That's true. So, you see, one thing I wanted to talk to you about or ask you about is a current event. At the time of this recording, you're in California. I'm in Alaska. Mm-hmm. You have your wonderful hockey team, the Los Angeles Kings.
Right.
But we'll talk about them another time.
They're not just mine. Are yours, too?
Oh, yeah. Best team ever. They're down 3-2 in their series right now, but I still think they're the best hockey team I've ever had the pleasure of enjoying. And I would like to, before we move on to the serious stuff, I'd like to point out that I had to throw on my special lucky shirt yet last night.
I'm just wondering what took you so long.
I don't know how much mojo's left in that shirt, if you believe in mojo. And I just want to make sure I don't use it up. So I put it aside because we won the Stanley Cup a couple years ago with me wearing that shirt. But it hasn't always worked since then. So I've wondered if there's not anything left into it. And so when I get desperate, I'll throw it on. And I was desperate. And
We were down 3-0 in the series.
We're now down 3-2.
That's correct.
I will continue wearing it for the rest of the season, if that's one game, two games, or for our 13 more wins. I will wear it just to take care of all of our fellow Kings fans. But the big issue is in that playing in the same building, the Staples Center, in this other, I don't know if I should call it a sport, but it's called basketball.
Okay.
I'm just joking. I don't want to put down our basketball loving friends. But the owner of the LA Clippers, David Sterling, basically got caught on TMZ, which is not always the most credible source, allegedly got caught in a recording with his young girlfriend, okay. I guess is what she's called. I don't know too much about her. I know she's mixed race. But basically, she took a picture and posted it on our Instagram with Magic Johnson, from my understanding. And Mr. Sterling kind of went off on her. And somehow it got recorded. I don't know whether she did it, whether the ex-wife, I don't know if she's an ex-wife or a current wife, whatever it is, recorded it. But it somehow got released to TMZ. And he's basically getting on this young girlfriend's case about her taking a picture with Magic Johnson and posting it on Instagram.
Because it was Magic Johnson? Because he has AIDS or what?
Because he's black.
Oh, because he's black.
Now, typically, you want everybody coming, whatever sport you're in, you want everybody coming to it because that's how you make money as an owner.
Right.
Basketball, we'll stay away from all the stereotypes. But the bottom line is Magic Johnson is a legend in basketball. He's mm-hmm. in the Hall of Fame. And yes, he has AIDS, but most people that understand basketball know that has nothing to do with his basketball career with the LA Lakers.
Which he's been in remission for a long time too, which is interesting, but
Right. He's you know, he's taking care of it, and that's a whole nother conspiracy, health related. We can go all kinds of places with that, but right. We'll save that for another one.
Okay.
But basically, Sterling was upset that his mixed race girlfriend had taken a picture and posted it on Instagram of Magic Johnson. He didn't mind if she was friends with anybody that was black. I think he even said Mexican, but he shouldn't put it on the internet. So
are we saying that he's a racist?
I think that's exactly what we're saying, and that's what Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, and even the current coach of the LA Clippers is pretty upset about it. And the current coach is a guy named Doc Rivers, who just happens to be black, or politically correct, African-American.
So isn't his girlfriend of mixed race?
I think she, from the recording I heard, that allegedly has David Sterling talking about it, she states that she is black and Hispanic.
Okay. How can he, you know what I'm saying? Like, if he's racist, would he be with a girl who's of mixed race?
I think the guy, his so-called country club friends, this guy is old school, in his 70s, probably views race like they did 100, 200 years ago. From what I understand, from what he sounded like on the recording, and I ask anybody that's questioning this or wants to hear it, go online, look it up. It's out there. You can listen to the recording, but it's basically plantation owner style thinking where he can have a girlfriend of color or a bed partner of color, I guess we could say, that he may talk to and be friendly with and actually enjoy their company. But when it comes to the country club buddies that think like he thinks, it's not something you want to promote, and it's definitely not something you want this girl promoting in social media. It's okay to have that girlfriend, but don't let her hang out with other people of color.
But it's Magic Johnson. I mean, he's a man of color, but he's Magic Johnson. I mean, he's transcended color. He's
right.
Who and he is.
He's done a lot of good in this world, just like anybody from Jackie Robinson. You know, even before that, people that are great in a sport or in a profession, you know, in science, maybe we can go back to George Washington Carver, something like that. They transcend that typical racist view of color. And I think that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a surprise and maybe a slap in the face that an NBA basketball owner would still have these views. And while it shouldn't be maybe quite surprising, we still have a ways to go as far as the way people think. I mean, he is like grandpa. So really, grandpa may have that view. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really affect our world right now. Now, in this case, grandpa has a little bit more money and power, so maybe he has a little bit of an effect. But it should just remind us that we just need to keep looking at our neighbor like they are a fellow human being instead of somebody from a different world that's out to take what's ours. And
that comes with that insecurity. I mean, I can see how somebody can be insecure where their hot girlfriend is taking a picture with Magic Johnson. I mean, he's Magic Johnson.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So maybe there was a little insecurity there.
It didn't sound like that on the recording. It just sounded like he had to answer to his friends about why this girl that David Sterling takes care of is hanging out.
Well, this is what he's telling her, though, right? He's talking to her, saying, right. Look, I don't want you taking this picture because it looks bad, excuse me, to my friends. But maybe deep down, he's like, man, I don't want you hanging out with Magic Johnson.
Right. And in the recording that I listened to, he said he's okay with her hanging out with them. It's just not okay having
to publicize it.
Right. So people are crazy.
So, yeah, I think racism still exists to a degree. I think we've come a long way. But I do think that people do see people as people.
I think it's getting better. I think in certain areas, it's not perfect, and there's a long way to go. But I think we can't ever let that hold us back, no matter what side of the, you know, wherever we come from or whatever we do, whatever color our skin is. I think we just got to keep going and take care of the people we love and be okay with people we don't understand or we don't know, and not be afraid.
Well, I think it's going to come with somewhat of an evolution of our consciousness, because once we get to the point where we realize that that person is you anyway, then you really can't have that hatred and that judgment and that prejudice. Because when you look at somebody, if you see a bum on the street and you think, oh my God, they're so disgusting, then you're at that mentality. That's where you're at. But if you can look at them and say, you know what, that's just another aspect of me. That's me. That's a form of who I am. We all have that in us. So that just comes with growth and understanding. And a lot of that racism, I think, comes from ignorance and closed-mindedness. And until we can get through that, it's still going to exist in our society.
Yeah. And I think some people will tell you that we just don't understand. I mean, I for those that haven't met me or seen me, my skin has a slight brownish color, so obviously I have some kind of color in me.
Wait, how do you have a tan in Alaska?
I don't know if it's a tan anymore. I think I've realized that my skin is normally this color. No, I'm just joking. But I think some people have experienced racism in a totally different way than I have.
Just prejudice in general. As a woman, right. I've experienced prejudice as well.
But that's because you're a woman. I'm just joking.
Think about it, people can accept an African-American president before they can accept a woman president. That happened first.
So that really shocked just me.
Just saying. It didn't shock me.
I was really shocked. Men are afraid of the women.
They're afraid of the women.
I thought they were afraid of people of color. They're really afraid of women.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think maybe women are afraid of women?
I don't know if women are afraid of women.
They should be. Have you ever seen them stab each other in the back? They should be scared. Do you remember when you played hockey in a women's league? I was scared just watching it.
Oh my gosh, come on.
Okay, maybe this leads into the subject we were going to originally talk about, and that's vulnerability.
Vulnerability.
I don't know how we can segue that, but we just did.
Yeah, it wasn't a really good, smooth segue, but it's a transition nonetheless.
I'm telling you, when you're playing hockey with women, you are in a vulnerable position. And that's not coming from men. I've seen you guys play hockey. You guys hate each other. Why is that?
It's not that we hate each other. Women have a certain intensity. And I think it comes from an emotional aspect of femininity, where we are emotional creatures. We're a little more emotional than men are. So when you have that emotion of out there and you've got to do this and you're going to do everything you can, and I don't know, I think that emotion takes over. We have a little less control over our emotions. So there's a little more intensity.
I remember your hockey teams holding a grudge against other hockey teams that probably, if you guys played each other today, and this is years later, would still hold true.
Maybe. They do. Women do hold a grudge. They don't forget as easily. I think we've talked about that, where women can play hockey together and they will hold a grudge for years, and men can beat each other up and go have a beer afterwards. It's just a different makeup of who we are. I don't know that there's anything good or bad about it, but, you know.
Shouldn't we practice being vulnerable with each other to the point where you don't have to hold a grudge, or it's not a slap in the face if somebody knocks you down, whether it's in hockey or in the real world?
Yeah, we do take it kind of personally, huh? I think we should be vulnerable with each other, though. Maybe not necessarily in hockey, but there is a certain realness to somebody who's vulnerable, who kind of opens themselves up. The problem is when you open yourself up to other people, you take the chance of getting hurt. So that's where, especially if you've been hurt before, a lot of times, you know, if you're an adult, I'm sure you've been hurt somewhere along the line. And what you've done is you've built the wall, just like Pink Floyd, you know, brick by brick. You separate yourselves from the other people. We have built a wall around ourselves because we do not want to get hurt.
But I would think that you have to take the chance of being hurt to actually have the opportunity to be truly happy.
In order to truly experience, you have to let yourself be vulnerable. There's no way around it.
Well, let me ask you this. There's this, sometimes you hear, and this could be a generalization, but women saying they want a sensitive man, a man that understands their needs. But then when that man comes along and he tries to be a little sensitive and feeling, and he displays these feelings, isn't that kind of scary? I've noticed that if you want to, that men who actually try to be a little bit more sensitive, less, go back to a previous podcast, alpha male-ish,
mm-hmm.
that's not quite comforting as you would think. Does that make sense to you?
Totally makes sense to me. I think women think that they want somebody who's a little more sensitive, but there is a certain survival instinct that women are attracted to men who are going to be a protector. So there has to be a balance. I mean, I think we all have to have that balance where it comes from that whole hunter-gatherer mentality where women were staying at home and they protected the children, but we knew that the man was going to be out there protecting us. So if we sense that that protection's not going to be there, that they're not going to stand up and be that alpha male, I guess, I think that's where women feel that they are vulnerable.
And well, I know one of the biggest complaints I've heard in my lifetime as a male is when somebody I care for, a woman, is complaining about something, telling me about their day, all the crap that maybe happened or didn't happen, and I try to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's me being typical alpha male-ish, trying to take care of the problems when I should be maybe a little more vulnerable and just listen.
And understanding.
Yeah, not even necessarily having to fix it, just being there, because that's what I've been told is the best way to go. And that's, as I've learned, that is probably the best way to go, is just listen sometimes and not always try to solve the world's problems with whoever I'm talking to.
It's like that scene in White Men Can't Jump, not to get into a racist thing, where she says that. She goes, oh, I'm thirsty. And he goes to get her, Woody Harrelson goes to get her a drink of water. She goes, no, I don't want you to get me a drink of water. And he said, why? You're thirsty. So I got you a drink of water. She goes, no, I want you to listen to me and understand my thirstiness. You know, I mean, that's what you want to do. Not solve my problem for me, but understand the problem that I'm going through. Go through it with me.
That's expecting me to think way ahead of the game. If I'm in that situation, because I would go get the glass of water. And
to be honest, that scene kind of bugs me, because if I'm thirsty and you went and got me a glass of water, I'd be like, cool, somebody got me a glass of water.
Yeah, you don't want me to listen to you.
I'd be thankful because now I have a drink of water. So maybe I'm not a typical female. I don't know.
Okay, so let me ask you this. I think one of the best ways to display vulnerability is when you become a parent. What do you say about that?
I was thinking that same thing when you were talking about solving problems, because I do that too. When your kid says, oh, I'm having this situation, the first thing we jump in to do as parents is to try and solve that problem, as opposed to letting them work through their own problems and that sort of sense of growth. I have an issue with that. Allowing my son to actually go through his problems without me trying to jump in and save him, because that's my instinct as a mother.
It's really hard, and I think that's why maybe children teach us so much about ourselves. If we're willing to sit back and listen and stop freaking out about the health and welfare of our children for a minute, because we want to make their lives perfect. but in trying to make their lives perfect, sometimes we protect them from that growth that they need to be healthy and to be able to live on their own and be safe. But our natural instinct is to take care of them at every step of the way. And I know our children are different ages, but I think you and I have both gone through the same thing with our children, and we have to let them out into this big, scary world that might hurt them.
No, never.
Yeah, exactly. we'll go to hockey for a minute, and I'll tell a story about when my son first became old enough to play in a full Czech league. And he was going against – he was a teenager at the time, and he's going against guys that were bigger than me. And I don't think I'm a small guy, but these guys outweighed me by like 40 pounds. And they would knock him on his butt, and it was the hardest thing in the world for me to sit there and take it and not want to go out there. And you see it all the time in sports where the dad comes running out on the field and beats the crap out of some little kid that's just playing the sport because he's trying to protect his kid. Right. And it's a scary thing to let your kids out into that world. I have a daughter, and that's even worse.
It seems like that the worst thing you could possibly experience in the world is somebody hurting you really bad until you see somebody hurting your child. And that is the worst pain you can experience.
Right. But sometimes, I think sometimes you have to let it happen. But I think resistance, and this is a form of resistance, sometimes is better for their growth. But it's not that easy. And it's hard, especially in an age where we're understanding what bullying is about and how hard it is for children in this world nowadays. It's hard to sit there and watch it. And I don't know if they would have told me about all this stuff before I became a parent. I might have thought twice. It's scary. I love my children, but I basically, by having children, put everything that is important to me out in the hands of the world to where I have no control over it in the end. I can do everything perfect and it'll hurt me, or I could blow everything. I could be the worst parent in the world and my child could succeed in ways that are just amazing. Mm-hmm. And that's maybe the best example of how vulnerability works in this world. You have no control, and the universe shows you that the minute you have children.
Zero control. We think we're in control. And that's what's so funny is that we sit there and say that we're in control of all these things. We're in control of nothing. And you're right. That's a great example, having a child, because you're not in control. And you can try to control them. And trust me, I'm an overprotective parent. I know, as you well know. Yeah. And I want them to grow. I want them to be out there. But I don't want to see him hurt. I don't want to see anybody hurt him. And that's just and finding that balance of allowing him to grow and giving him that space, but then also being there for him. That's a tough, tough thing to do. That is extremely vulnerable because you don't have any control.
And you know, the scary thing is it doesn't change. My kids are both adults. And I just hope and pray every day. And I don't think I'm a very religious person, but there's part of me praying every day.
So it doesn't get better then?
I think you learn to live with it a little bit more, so it does get better.
Okay.
And you start seeing a lot of the things that you hoped for and prayed for. It's so you're able to accept that vulnerability a little bit more. But
And it's hard as a parent of a young teenager. That's really difficult because that time is so hard already.
Yeah, it's the worst.
And to watch them go through it, it's not easy.
Yeah, I think when we decide it's time to have a child, we completely forget the teenage years. And I think maybe that is a biological part of our DNA, because if we remembered it, especially nowadays in modern times for the last maybe 200 to 500 years, we wouldn't have children if we remembered that time of our lives. Yeah, the hormones are going crazy. It's so painful. Even if you're somewhat happy in your teenage years, it's not easy. So I think much like that so-called pain that women go through when they're I'm just joking. It's when they have their children, women go through a lot of pain. But there is a biological function that makes you forget about how painful it is, or we'd stop having babies.
That's true.
I say we in a general way, because I would never be able to handle that kind of pain.
You think you wouldn't.
I broke my ankle and I started sweating and wanted to throw up and cussed a lot.
Well, they say that women actually have a higher pain tolerance than men, so.
I would never argue helps. That. See, that's where I'm not vulnerable, or I'm displaying my vulnerability. I don't have to have the same pain tolerance that you have, Katie. And I'm okay with that.
Well, that's good that you've come to terms with it.
I finally have. I'll put up with a lot of crap, but nope, I'm not having a baby, ever, ever.
Not in this lifetime, anyway.
That would be horrible if I was reincarnated, just so I had to go through that and learn a lesson.
But you know what? It is a great experience, even though there is a lot of pain involved. It's amazing.
I think it was amazing from my side of the, you know, of the experience, where I didn't have to feel any pain. But
right. Well, the physical pain is sort of overshadowed by the joy of a new life. I mean, that part of it is really amazing. And so the pain kind of takes second, you know, fiddle. Well, I don't know what you want to say.
But that's where I think the bringing in that new life, I'm telling you, if you knew how vulnerable you were going to be when you brought in that new life, we might think differently. So luckily, we don't have to think about that. And
unfortunately, people don't think enough about it.
I think they just need to throw their hearts out there sometimes.
I mean, people have kids all willy-nilly, like, hey, I'm just going to have a bunch of kids, and don't really think about they are actually bringing a life, and you are responsible for it.
Maybe we need to have, you know, around Easter, they say, you know, if you get a bunny, after Easter, most people's bunnies end up dying or going to the... Maybe we should have public service announcements like that. If you're going to have a child... Remember, you have to take care of that child for 20, 30, 40 years.
Right.
As my dad would say.
But shouldn't that be common sense?
Come on. We're too busy working and trying to just scrape by to have common sense sometimes. We got Fox News and MSNBC on. You know what? We don't have that kind of time.
Well, ain't nobody got time for that. No, but what we... what if we take it a step further, and I'm going to go ahead and twist it around in the way that I do, is that we actually chose our parents prior to our incarnation as a human being. So if that's the case, then everything is actually perfect the way it is.
I don't know if we get to choose, but I tend to believe everything is perfect the way it is. And there's, I think, one of the things that maybe influenced my belief, because I might believe that we choose our parents before we become children. But, you know, Shirley Temple in the movie Bluebird kind of taught me that. I don't know if you remember that movie.
Kind of, yes.
Where basically they show her in heaven picking her parents.
Right.
And kind of her whole life experience. Talking about it makes me have to go back and watch it. I haven't watched that since I was a kid.
Well, I truly believe that that is what we do. Prior to this incarnation, we actually not only choose our parents, but we choose our entire path. Everything that we know what's going to happen, we see what is going to happen to us. And that's really hard for a lot of people to swallow because they say, how could somebody possibly choose that path? But if you knew that by choosing that path, it would only make you a stronger soul, that it's a sort of a purification or an alchemy of some sorts where you come into this existence and as through this, it's a purification, and that you knew that on the other side that you're only going to be a stronger soul for it, you absolutely would choose that.
So it's maybe the ultimate display of vulnerability.
Oh my gosh, it truly is.
Where you know you might go to this place where you're going to live in a mansion and you'll have to learn to treat those below you with dignity, or you will make those suffer so that you can learn something from it, or you will go through a life of suffering so that you can experience suffering and maybe in the
understand
next level
it.
Yeah, transcend that and understand where you're going, what you're coming from, what the meaning and what all of us have to experience.
I mean, doesn't that make sense though?
It kind of does make sense. But,
or even just as a karmic cleansing. So if you have an experience in life where maybe you do something really bad in one life, you realize, hey, you know what? I did something really bad. I want to clear my karma. Therefore, I will come back as the recipient of those horrible things.
Sometimes I believe that, and I've spent a lot of my life believing that. And then sometimes I'm like, maybe it's just cell memory. Maybe we remember all this stuff, our descendants. Maybe it's in our DNA that we remember some of this.
I think you're right on right there. Not only is it in our DNA, we have our genetic history, we have our ancestors, but we also have our spiritual ancestors, and a lot of that's connected. And we actually may carry some of those experiences with us as we reincarnate into other beings.
And so by doing that, we actually may experience the same people or beings in different lifetimes.
Absolutely. It's sort of a spiritual genealogy.
So in a previous life, did you try to cut off my leg like you did in hockey?
Nope, just in this one.
Just in this one? So
in the next life, I may have to be the recipient of those horrible trippings in hockey.
But I'm like a really nice guy, so I couldn't trip you.
That's not what everybody says in hockey, though. But what if I asked you to? Okay, here's a great dilemma. Okay, we're kind of running out of time. But so let's say I did that. I went the next life. I said, Christian, you know what? I feel really bad about tripping you. So in the next life, if you wouldn't mind, if you could trip me, that way I could clear my karma. This will be a karmic cleansing for me. So, but then that's kind of tough to be the deliverer of karma. So when you look at these people doing horrible things in this world, maybe they were actually here just doing their job and actually contracted with the person that they were delivering it to.
You're talking to a guy that doesn't even believe in the death penalty. I can't see ever dishing out that form of retribution.
What if I asked you to, Christian? I'm asking you as a favor, as a friend. I need you to do this for me.
I don't know. At this point, I can't do it.
That's what I'm saying. So the deliverer is actually, you know, they've got a tough job too.
Okay, so let me tell you the only way this would work in a hockey sense in the next life. I've gotten permission from our producer, HB, to mention that his name is HB.
Okay.
If that is his name.
If that even is his real name.
So what you would have to do is you would have to knock our producer, HB, on his butt. And then I might trip you.
That would be the only way?
I can't just do it without a reason.
The reason would be because I asked you to.
I can't just do something you ask me to.
If we made a contract?
No.
Prior to come in here, we made a contract. You said you would deliver it. I said I'd be the receiver. And then that's it. You have to deliver the contract.
Do you think I would sign that contract, though, unless you provoked me?
What if I threatened you?
You could threaten me. That's okay. But I'm like, whatever. People have threatened me before. But you would have to provoke me.
But it is kind of putting myself into a vulnerable situation. Because especially as you come into this existence, we're not all-knowing. And we have the veil. What they call the veil over our eyes. We can't see past what we're experiencing. So that's in its of itself a huge vulnerability.
Scary.
And why did we choose it then?
What is the whole purpose behind it even? I mean, why would...
What is the purpose?
Why in a perfect world would we have to be so vulnerable?
To have the true experience. Because if you were going to walk a tightrope, and it was sitting on the ground, it wouldn't really be much of an experience, would it? You have to have that fear that something might happen, that you could fall, that there is a certain amount of danger to it. If you didn't have that and you understood that it was all safe and there really is no issues with any of it, because there really isn't any issues, then it wouldn't be a full experience. There wouldn't be any free choice either, and there wouldn't be free will.
I think you might be onto something. I think this is the most philosophical we've both gone in the same direction before on our podcast.
I think so. Maybe because we opened up a little more vulnerable.
Okay. We became vulnerable on this, but let's go back to our conspiracy of the week and one of the suggestions of 9/11.
Okay.
And let's see how maybe we should have been more, how it was okay to be vulnerable to that. We'll go crazy on this one, okay? And this is going to maybe offend a couple people.
Okay.
We were attacked on 9/11, obvious. We can stay away from all the conspiracy theories. What happened after 9/11 is we decided to not be vulnerable anymore. So we became more nationalistic.
Totally united.
Right. And there were some good parts to that. We became closer as a people. But right after that, after we became closer, after we realized our neighbors are our fellow human beings that we should look after, we let a lot of people tell us that vulnerability is not an option anymore, that we needed to take the steps to make sure that a 9/11 never happened again.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to war.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and maybe it was okay to go after the people that attacked us. I'm not going to argue that. I know I felt in my heart at that time that those people deserved death, whoever they were. But then after that, after, let's say, the Afghanistan...
how far do we go? Right.
Right. Next, we went to Iraq. And I wanted to go to Iraq. I wanted to make sure we were never vulnerable again, that we never felt the pain of watching so many of our fellow citizens die like they did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The massacre.
Right. So we went out there and we started attacking other places, other countries. And maybe there were terrorists there. Maybe there were evildoers there, as the presidential quote goes.
The axis of evil.
Yeah. Yes. We were okay with that. We went out there, did a lot of things. And then a few years later, we're starting to get to the point where, as in the United States, we support our troops, but we don't support the war anymore.
We barely support each other.
Right. And maybe we're at a point now where it's okay to be a little vulnerable to attack. But we want to have our freedoms, and we want to be decent to people that aren't attacking us, instead of maybe throwing out there and attacking people that may or may not attack us. I think we got to a point where it was time to be vulnerable again. You know, maybe our freedom, so-called freedom in this country, is to maybe put ourselves in a dangerous position where somebody may attack us for whatever reason, but we don't have to sit there and kill other people to make sure we don't get attacked.
And I think we lash out through the pain and the hurt and the loss, and that's why we retaliate. But is it the right thing to do? I don't know, but that's the way we react. But the unification after 9/11 to me was amazing, and how people were just nicer to each other. And the people on the road, you know, they used their blinkers, and they just were more courteous, and people weren't cutting each other off. And we really were kinder to one another just for a brief time. I wish it had lasted a little bit longer, and unfortunately came out of such a tragic situation. But it kind of reminds me, I always think about that line in Starman. Do you ever see Starman?
I did, but it's been a long time.
It's an old movie, but he's basically an alien, and he's observing humans. And one of the things that he says is, you humans are the best when things are at their worst. And I always think about that line because it's so true. When things start falling apart, humans really can stand up and be amazing creatures. But when we live in our complacent, carb-infested existence, then we don't care about each other, and we just are so not courteous to one another. We don't care about each other, and it just becomes like a society of, it's all about me.
And I wasn't that the 80s? All about me? What some people say
the
that
me was, generation?
Well, it was the greatest time ever with Reagan in power. It was all about getting rich, about me. You know,
it's okay to thrive and want to better yourself. I don't have a problem with that. It's when it's at the cost and the expense of others.
I think one of the greatest things about the United States is we can thrive. We have the opportunity to do great things. But where we might lose our way is when we do it at all cost and not look at our fellow man. And I think there's a way to do that and still be successful in this world. We don't have to give away all that we've earned to treat our neighbors with respect and with dignity.
I think if we make decisions that are truly come from a place of love for one another and make more decisions through our heart, our thinking heart, because your heart actually does have the ability to think like a brain, and get it out of our heads and make those decisions within your heart, then those decisions are going to be with compassion. And that's where those, it's not going to be at the expense of others.
But how do we practice that day to day in a world where you got all these different news channels telling you to be afraid of everybody, mm-hmm. be afraid of the people that love Obama, be afraid of the people that own guns, be afraid of the Muslim countries that are out to get you, and be afraid of China. You know, mm-hmm. how do you practice?
You have to create, what I feel you have to create is a Teflon skin that lets just roll right off you. You can't absorb it. You can't absorb the negativity. You can't absorb the fear. You have to understand that people are doing the best that they can, and love and respect that. And if you live your life that way, then those other things, you can't be affected by it. You can be affected by somebody being hurt because you have compassion, because we're humans. But if you buy into the fear and it's all about me and I'm going to get mine and I'm going to take what I'm going to take, living that mentality, it's not going to be healthy for you or the people around you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think that's it's a fine line, and it's something you cannot just drift through life doing. You have to be in the moment. You have to think about it. But you can't overanalyze it. You just have to live life. One of the do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. I think it's a simple rule, and I think it works in most cases, or maybe every case.
Sometimes though, I wonder if that phrase shouldn't be changed to, is supposed to treat people the way you want to be treated, treat people the way they want to be treated. Because everybody doesn't want to be treated the same way. Because we treat ourselves horribly, if you think about it. We're our worst critic. We're our biggest judge. We've got this judge in our head that is constantly condemning us and for every mistake that we make. So really treating others as we treat ourselves might not even be the best way. I think we should treat others as they want to be treated. Because they're asking, they send out the vibration of how they want to be treated. And it's up to us to read that vibration. Some people actually want to be treated poorly because they're, once again, condemning themselves and judging themselves. And if that's the way they want to be treated, then that's basically the way, I guess, we should treat them.
Okay, but if I come across that person that wants to be treated poorly, that hurts me. I don't think I can do it.
It does.
I don't think I can be around that person.
And that's the thing. That's where you disassociate, because like vibrations are going to be together. And that's what makes it a perfect system. So that you have somebody that's with you that's very, very negative, and they have what do you call them, energy vampires or something. You have one of those people around you. They're not going to want to be around you either, because your energy is at a state where they can't sustain it. So that's what makes it a perfect system, because like energies are going to flock together. And that's just the way the system works on a molecular level.
Birds of a feather.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
All right. We've gone all kinds of crazy places. I think maybe
we have. And we've actually gone way over time, too.
But it's been entertaining to at least us.
At least us.
Yes. I think everybody else should chime in and tell us what they liked or disliked on one of our social media sites, which would be Facebook or Twitter.
Talking Shiitake.
Talking Shiitake. Now, Katie, you always tell me or ask me for some clothing.
Never asked you for clothing, ever.
I think we wear two different sizes, and my dresses aren't that pretty.
Although I think I stole your Thorns shirt. What is that?
Game of Thrones.
I did steal that shirt from you. Sorry, bud.
Right. And now you
notice. Just to look out in.
You know, I will never, when I come to visit you and our producer in California, I will never, ever bring one of my Doctor Who shirts.
So anyway, what about clothing?
I think you should tell. Do you have any final thoughts for all of our wonderful listeners out there?
You know, I think it's all, I've always said it's about vibration. And if you can live within a certain vibration, we're all going to have peaks and valleys, and you're going to have sorrow and you're going to have hurt. But if you understand that everything really is perfect and everything is okay, and you can maintain that vibration, you're going to see that that's only going to come back to you in so many ways, and that you can open your eyes and see what's really going on. Don't be closed-minded. Just open your mind and understand that it is an amazing, extraordinary universe out there, and that the more you know, the more information you're going to get, and the more you're going to grow, and it's just going to perpetuate and get better and better and better. And it's just, if you want to know the answers, ask the questions. You'll be given the answers if you're ready. That's what I want to leave them with.
And I would go along with that, is saying the only way to get to that point is to be vulnerable, to be okay right. with some of the pain that may come your way, because you need that resistance to take that next step and to become that person you've always wanted to be.
You really do have to kind of love the sorrow. Even as hard as it is, you do have to love it and appreciate where it's gotten you and what it has taught you.
Some of the best things that come to you are through pain
and through
heartbreak and troubles. So we'll leave you with that. Everybody can ponder it and let us know what they think. So until the next time, just talking shiitake. Have a good night, day, whatever you want to call it.